It is our great pleasure to welcome back to the program Sheriff Howard Buffett, and with him General Alberto Jose Mejia of Bogota, Colombia. Howard, Sheriff, you know, you have lots of friends, and you're sort of like the mini UN around here. Why is the general here in Decatur?
Well, we've worked with the general in Colombia on some of the programs that on some of the humanitarian efforts that they've put into place. And when I was down there last, we were talking about how he's driven a tank and flown a helicopter and done all these things. And I said, have you ever operated a combine on the farm? And he says, no. I said, well, then you come see me next time you're in the U.S. And he's here last week, so he came to visit us in Decatur.
All right, so you had an experience actually in the combine yesterday.
Exactly. It was fantastic.
Yeah, probably not as nerve-wracking as looking for landmines, I would imagine. I, if you don't mind for a second, let's talk a little bit about Colombia, because I think most people, when they hear the name, they automatically think of Pablo Escobar or the Cali cartel or, you know, the drugs, FARC, whatever it might be. And we'll talk about all those things. But Colombia has, 50 million people, a tremendous culture and cuisine and incredible geography. Talk a little bit about your home.
Colombia is a beautiful country known by its diversity and biodiversity, too. Colombia has struggled over the last 53 years to win a war against the FARC, a terrorist organization, and against narco trafficking. And we have suffered the consequences of this very, very bad combination between terrorism and narco trafficking. Gladly, for the last 3 years, we have been doing a peace process, a negotiation with this terrorist organization, and the government finally a year ago signed a peace process with the FARC. So all of this is very important because while we are trying to bring the country to peace, our economy is one of the most stable economies in the region. Tourism is growing. Security is now back to international standards. So the country is again winning its security. So that is a very good news. Of course, we still have a long way to go. Narco trafficking and coca crops and cocaine still part of one of our greatest problems. But we have a very strong alliance with the U.S. Government, with the U.S. Military, and with great U.S. institutions that help us to continue to bring this fight very tough in the jungles of Colombia.
You were named the new commander of the Colombian Army in 2015. Howard, how brave, unbelievable are, law enforcement and soldiers and people who are dealing with bad guys that I don't think we barely understand in this country. What is it like, the bravery that's displayed down there in Colombia by these fine folks?
Well, it's interesting. I've spent, three decades working in Africa, and I've seen some pretty tough things there. And as I learned more about Colombia, bad people do the same bad things all over the world. And I've seen people do things to other people that it's hard to imagine what they're thinking when they do it, if they are thinking. And, when you're dealing with people who really have no conscience, they don't care whether you're a civilian or a military individual or a police officer, and they torture you. And, the general can tell you that we hear so much about Boko Haram or the Lord's Resistance Army in Africa, but the truth is some of the same things have gone in.
Or ISIS, and you've got right. It's unbelievable to me. In this country, we've had protests. We've had, I would say, a divided country a little bit about law enforcement over the last couple of years. But, I mean, cops don't have to worry about car bombs, or being beheaded or tortured. I mean, what is it like, General? I mean, the honest men and women, who serve your country display incredible bravery every day.
Exactly, and we have a struggle to, along everything. I mean, we are the second country in the world with most landmines, planted.
Okay, let's, if you don't mind, can I ask about that? Sheriff Buffett was informing me of that. I had no idea because of this 50-year basically civil war with these organizations, you have more landmines, second most in the world.
These terrorists, in their thinking, they always wrote in their terrorist doctrine that a landmine is the perfect terrorist. You don't have to feed him. You don't have to pay him. And landmines don't sleep. So that is why we have close to 15,000 people, civilian and military amputees, 11,000 of those soldiers of the Army of Colombia. So it's quite a challenge, but we are blessed of having very brave soldiers. Soldiers that, for example, during the Korean War, fought beside a U.S. Army division and won close to 500 Silver Stars and Bronze Stars with V devices in Korea. So
that's the Colombian military. Yes.
Those are the kinds of soldiers that we have. They are very brave police officers. And we learn, thanks to the U.S. support, not only to develop special capabilities such as Army aviation, a very big fleet of Black Hawks, demining, intelligence, special operation forces. We learn all of that, but along that path, an army that has been fighting this war, being in the last 20 years the number one institution of the country in all polls regarding the trust of the people and regarding respect for the institution.
Well, and if you think about it, you know, Afghanistan is the only country that has more landmines than Colombia. And we think of Afghanistan as some far-off place. It's where our troops have gone, you know, where we lost a lot of American lives and have struggled to have success, okay? And it's got a long history. And Colombia is, in our hemisphere, been one of our closest partners. And if we're going to ever have success in solving our drug problems here, particularly cocaine when it comes to Colombia, we have to have a partnership with Colombia. I mean, that's where it begins, and they fight this every single day as hard as they can, and today they've got a real challenge with it.
They certainly do, and have had for years. You were involved in the hunt for Pablo Escobar. You know, after that is the Cali cartel. You know, most of us are informed through this crazy TV series on Netflix. You know, I mean, it's some sort of entertainment that we watch, not live it every day. What was it like? I mean, when they were literally burying hundreds of millions of dollars, you know, in the ground. I mean, Howard, the money behind these drug traffickers, I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, I think if Pablo Escobar was alive today, he'd be pretty high on the Forbes 400 list.
Certainly, if not at the very top of that list. Yeah. How did you go about tackling that money, the corruption, people he was able to buy?
We have learned the hard way. I mean, many people have been killed in this fight. Presidential candidates, media.
Yeah, journalists.
Journalists.
Colombia is one of the least safe places on earth for journalists. I mean, you know, the government doesn't keep them from. I mean, there's freedom of the press, but the retaliation by the traffickers.
Right. But all those numbers have changed dramatically the last 15 years. Imagine this. 15 years ago, the capital of Colombia, Bogota, was surrounded by 22 FARC fronts. The people was kidnapped inside the city. So all odds were against the state of Colombia. We were getting close to be called a failed state. But we together, with the support of the U.S., and this is the great news, we were able to change that. We were able to push these people out of these locations, to push them back into the jungles, to reduce this enemy from 25,000 to 20,000, 15,000, 10,000, 5,000. And that's when they wanted to finally negotiate. So it's a success story. The U.S. always behind us, a great alliance with the U.S. military, especially SOUTHCOM, Southern Command and Army South. Great organizations such as CIA, DEA, FBI, INL from State Department, all these people, great Americans, fighting in Colombia as the U.S. first line of defense, but helping our democracy to survive and now to see the future in a different way.
The drug problem that we have in this on our side of this equation is the demand side, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know what we do about that. I mean, it's easy for, and I think some people just look at South America and say, well, this drug problem's your problem. It's all coming here because the demand is here.
Well, it's a two-way street, and obviously the demand fuels it. But if we can shut off the supply, then it changes the scenario. So I think we have to fight just as hard to shut off the supply as we do anything. But, you know, what I'm encouraged by now is seeing some of the same lawyers. I'm not a fan of lawyers, and nobody is, but when you need them, you need them. And the same attorney who took on the tobacco companies is taking on the pharmaceutical companies. And if you go back to the history of where we are today, especially with the opioids, it is a self-inflicted wound to a large degree in this country. And so this attorney and his group, if they can turn this into a similar type of scenario where they were successful with the tobacco companies and they're successful with the pharmaceutical countries, maybe we can get the billions of dollars we need for rehabilitation. I mean, when I look at the jail just down the street here and I see the amount of people that are put in that jail that are addicts, they're not drug dealers. They haven't hurt anybody. I take that back. I never look at drugs as a victimless crime, because if they're purchasing the drugs through that process, they are hurting someone. Right. So it's not a victimless crime, but they have not gone out and violently hurt someone themselves. Okay. But the jail's never going to help them recover. So if you look at the amount of drug addicts and mental ill patients that we have in our jail today, it's breaking the bank. I mean, you know, we don't have the money to deal with it. So we have to get this under control. And I don't think it's anywhere near under control. I mean, I think it's going to get worse before it gets better.
I think it is, too. As I was telling you, I love this series Narcos on Netflix. And I'm watching two of these traffickers talk about the NAFTA agreement and how that just opened the floodgates, you know, for shipping trucks through Mexico back to the States just full of drugs. And I don't think most people credit Bill Clinton and NAFTA, and it certainly wasn't the intent.
But Brian, here's another unintended consequence. As we've seen marijuana legalized in some of the countries, or some of the states. In this country, they have converted tens of thousands of acres of marijuana to poppies in Mexico. So if you look at Mexico as our third largest trading partner, as our neighbor next door with 2,000 miles of border, you're not going to change that, okay? They are turning into a small Afghanistan in the sense that most of the heroin that comes into this country today, if it isn't coming in, well, most of it comes from Mexico. I mean, obviously, China is sending in some fentanyl and heroin through the mail, but it's getting produced now in Mexico. That's the difference that people aren't picking up on in a lot of cases, is that we used to ship this in from different places. Today, the general will tell you, he can explain to you how those cartels in Colombia no longer exist. So now they have their relationships with the cartel in Mexico. So the cocaine, the heroin, it's being either produced in Mexico or coming through Mexico or being controlled by the cartels. And that includes the meth and fentanyl as well. I mean, they're producing it in huge quantities in Mexico. This is a serious, serious concern for this country, and I think we're finally starting to wake up to it.
Well, with the opioid crisis, as you mentioned, now we have addicts that are not even, it's not like the days of crack or meth. You have a lady who has surgery on her knee, and because the federal government has said you have to have a pain-free experience in the hospital, doctors are handing these things out like candy. You have addicts now that are then turning to fentanyl or other street drugs when their prescriptions run out or they can't doctor shop. You have people walking around this community that wouldn't look like what you would think a drug addict would look like.
Detective Larner, one time last year, we were working with street crimes at the police department, sitting on a house, and one of the women who left the house, one of the vehicles at that time left the house, when we stopped her, 67-year-old individual, grandma, and she couldn't get the Oxycontin that she had gotten over the years for her pain, And someone told her how she could buy heroin. And there she was, possession of heroin, 67 years old. This problem has permeated every social economic status that exists in this country.
There's no doubt. And there has to be a lot more education about it, because I think most people, you know, if they're thankfully not impacted by this, they have no idea that it's going on. General, are you optimistic about our country's future together and working together and about Colombia?
Yes, I am, especially because Colombia is really ending 53 years of a very, very bad conflict. And the conflict was the excuse for everything, for underdevelopment, for not providing education, for not providing health, for not having a more professional military. It was always the excuse for everything. And now that excuse is gone, and now it is about development, and it is about, you know, fixing the problems that we have. Of course, the drug problem is a big one. This year, at the end of the year, we are closing the year with 50,000 hectares of coca manually eradicated by the military and the National Police Forces. Still a long way to go. There is a huge crop substitution program from the government. Is in its first steps, not producing the results that we need yet. But we are confident that these people that today is not being forced by the FARC to produce coca, these people that is not being attacked or harassed by Colombian cartels anymore, because the Mexican cartels took control of this business because of our fight in Colombia with the U.S. So the situation is going to be better. It's complicated, but the good news is that we have decided at the end of the peace process to maintain a strong military, to maintain the budgets that we had in the near past, which it is part of the recipe to continue to bring this fight into the problems, into the jungles of Colombia. In Central America, when they did their peace processes, they completely reduced and cut the military, cut their budgets, reduced their military forces, their national police, and years after, their security situation is, of course, worst. So this relationship between security and economic development is vital for the country's future, and that's what we are doing with the support of the U.S.
Yeah, it's amazing to me. I tell you, you can't say enough. Can you imagine? I mean, undercut almost at every step by their own government, you know, these brave men and women who have fought this fight for so long down there. Can you say enough about that?
But I mean, Brian, I'll tell you, here's the thing. You know, what we're facing in terms of the violence as a result of the drug activity and criminal activity driven by drugs is at record levels in this country.
We're approaching 600 homicides in Chicago alone.
Yeah, and the victims of the drugs is just, it's like a hockey stick going up. So Colombia is the only country that this country can turn to, that the United States can turn to for help in Honduras and Guatemala and El Salvador, and even in Mexico, hopefully someday, if we can get the partnership in place to do it. But you know, a lot of those countries aren't going to let the U.S. military walk in and have any control over anything. I mean, they'll take advice and they'll take a certain amount of oversight. But Colombia has fought this war and fought this battle as hard and as tough as it's been over a number of years. I mean, they took out the biggest drug kingpin in the world at one point and two of the toughest cartels.
Yes.
So to be able to have them as a partner fighting this war south of our border, regardless of what country it is critical for us. I mean, they speak the same language. They have respect for each other in a way that they'll never have the same kind of relationship they have with this country just because of our history. So Colombia is a pretty important partner for the United States going forward.
All right. Well, we appreciate the time, both of you gentlemen. I hope you enjoyed your brief time here in Decatur and your trip on the combine. How many people have you had on, you know, If I had to make a list of who's who in the combine.
I told the general, I didn't want him to feel any pressure, but I said, you know, Eva Longoria, Shakira, Tony Blair, Ben Affleck. I said, you know, he's got a little competition here. But he did very well. How did he stack up? He did very well. Shakira, and I'd put the general right in there at number two.
That's fantastic.
Eva won't talk to me now after I say that.
I don't want to close without saying one more thing. Part of my visit is because I had the great opportunity to meet Howard in Colombia. And now he's supporting an incredible program for humanitarian demining. As it is today, we have created this year in Colombia one brigade, perhaps the only one in the world, certified to do humanitarian demining. His foundation has done a very, very important donation that will let our people carry the latest technology, the latest equipment, and results are now felt by the people in the fields of Colombia. We are demining the fields of Colombia. The FARC used to plant mines even around the schools. And all of that is being done thanks to the support of the U.S. government, and in this case, the support of this foundation and great Americans that feel the pain that other people in other parts of the world suffer.
General, continued success for you in that program. And Sheriff Buffett, it was a pleasure. Thank you for letting us spend some time with the general.
Thank you.